Hi, folks, and welcome to Weber's Whipping Post, coming to you from sunny Arizona. This is the 51st edition. I'm Weber, and I'm delighted that you tuned in to listen. Today's episode is called Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption. Early last Saturday morning, Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota brainlessly tweeted out, "You're welcome." She was bragging about the Senate passing a spending bill so as to avoid a government shutdown. Given that the bill cost $1.2 trillion, many of us, including myself, think she should have kept her pie hole shut and let the government shut down. Keep in mind, the country is already $35 trillion in debt, and our esteemed congressmen seemingly have no intention of doing anything about it. The bill passed easily in the Senate, 74-24. After passing the House, one has to wonder what the hell Speaker of the House Mike Johnson was thinking for pushing the bill through, an act that might get him thrown out of his cushy speaker position if Marjorie Taylor Greene gets her way. His ouster will only embarrass Republicans further and the country further, plus cause more divide in the Republican Party. So what the hell was Mike thinking? You'd also think the bill had something in it for funds to secure the southern border, but you would be wrong. Keep in mind, Mike Johnson was just down there and said he intended on doing something about it. Well, Mike, once again, our congressman managed to put together a 1,000-page document just 2 days before the vote, so you know nobody read the damn thing. Wait until the news of the pork added to the bill comes oozing out from the swamp. This crap happens over and over again, and it's getting old. Of course, Biden was delighted to sign the bill, but he called it just a compromise, claiming neither side of Congress got everything they wanted. What about the side of the American people that have to pay that massive debt, Joe? At the time that I was putting this podcast together, the death toll in Moscow, Russia, was at 133 people. You probably heard about that last Friday when gunmen shot and bombed their way through the Crocus City Hall, killing people at random. Ironically, it turns out that the U.S. Embassy warned Russia 2 weeks prior to this attack. My first thought was how they got their hands on the guns, as gun ownership in Russia is reserved only for the people in power. But then it was reported 11 suspects, 4 of them known terrorists, had been rounded up and that ISIS was taking credit for the attack. Wait a minute. Somebody actually had the guts to claim responsibility for an attack when Vladimir Putin is the president of the country? That must have taken a lot of guts, but not a lot of smarts. Can you imagine the torture Putin is going to put those people through before he finally allows them to die? I'd bet it wasn't one of the gunmen who pounded his chest and said he did it. Of course, Putin is telling gullible media that Ukraine did it. And of course, Ukraine denies it to the gullible media. The Biden administration condemned it to the gullible media. So there is that to make the Russian people feel better. Really? A shout down at the Auburn Tigers after easily running through the SEC tournament and becoming a favorite to knock off the hated UConn team. They busted just about every NCAA bracket, including mine, by laying an egg against the perennial basketball powerhouse, those eggheads from Yale. Imagine that, a Tiger succumbing to a preppy Bulldog. The SEC, which is supposed to be so tough, saw favorite South Carolina, Kentucky, Florida, and Mississippi State all lose in the very first weekend of March Madness. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson wanted to pass another tax, this time on real estate purchases in Chicago. You see, that's what they do in Chicago, a sort of a reverse Robin Hood, where they take from the citizens and give to themselves and their cronies. There is a long, long history to this. The referendum failed, so then Johnson stuck a finger in his ear and started to look around for somebody to blame. Certainly, it couldn't be his fault for not realizing Chicagoans and Illinoisans are sick to death of being taxed like subjects to the whims of a king. And, of course, he wasn't going to blame his own constituents, those who blindly follow to kiss his ass. So he finally found a scapegoat who leveled the blame: Trump voters. Yep, they're the scum, once again, There's something not going a Dem's way. He even called those Trump voters cowardly for not wanting his hand in their pocket again. I wonder if he had to stick out his tongue at the voters, too. The referendum called Bring Chicago Home, whatever the hell that is, was going to give the mayor another $100 million he could partially spend on the homeless. It was those damn 38,000 Chicago Trump voters, he said. He just knew they were behind the referendum's failure, which lost by 22,000 votes. The people who voted for it probably are not going to be buying any Chicago real estate anytime in the next 25 years, so hey, what the hell do they care? You would have thought that Johnson would have had 22,000 extra votes just stuffed under his desk. Mayor Daley must have rolled over in his grave at this faux pas. Opponents of the referendum, those who might actually be in the market for real estate, claimed it was not a clear plan for exactly what would be done with the newfound $100 million. Well, Johnson probably figured that was none of their damn business. Johnson did say the money would have gone through a community process, something central to his style of leadership, whatever the hell that word salad means. Johnson is just a typical Democrat, a socialist in a jacket and tie that can't resist sticking his hand in someone else's pocket to do as he wishes. What do you think, folks? Is Johnson asshat of the month material? CBS News reporter Weijia Zhang got a surprise last week. She was interviewing a group of Latino workers and found that they don't believe Trump is a threat to democracy or that democracy is on the ballot in 2024. She had interviewed three Hispanic Arizonians, and not only were they not buying into the Trump threat, but they also believe the media and the Democrat Party are using it to death. They went further to criticize Vice President Harris's performance as border czar, saying she disappeared. New polls have shown Trump is making inroads with Latino voters since his last election, which Biden won by 20 points in that demographic. 46% of Hispanics now claim they will vote for Trump, compared to 40% for Biden. Biden was seen stumping last week in Latino communities, shamelessly pleading for their vote. A little late, Joe. This podcast is brought to you by Hoffman Chiropractic Neurology, celebrating 30 years in practice. Dr. Hoffman specializes in general musculoskeletal conditions, neurology, sports injuries, acupuncture, electrodiagnostics, and comprehensive wellness management. Dr. Hoffman provides exceptional care for patients of all ages, from infants to elderly, from expectant moms to athletes. Dr. Hoffman's goal is to provide all patients with a tailored treatment plan based on an extensive history, a thorough exam, and x-rays. Contact Hoffman Chiropractic Neurology for more information or to schedule an appointment. That number is 815-937-0446. Did you see Sandy Cortez made a royal ass out of herself last week when she was harshly questioning Tony Bobulinski about Hunter and Joe Biden's nefarious acts? She was attempting to interrupt Bobulinski from speaking any further by shouting over him, popping out her eyeballs, and waving her arms when she opened her pie hole to regurgitate the sentence, "RICO is not a crime." Hey, Sandy, it's a federal crime. Quit overloading your 10-pound ass with your 25-pound mouth. RICO stands for Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations and targets dishonest business activities such as money laundering and organized crime, you twit. Sorry, folks, until now I have steadfastly shied away from even mentioning this boob's name, not wanting to give her any more fame than I would a bird passing over my car. But this one really took the cake. She greatly embarrassed her New York constituents, and they would do well to march her ass out of the House at the next election. History will be kind to Tony Bobulinski one day, and not only for his military service. He has to be watching over his back every minute of the day. Did you ever hear of Harry Sloan? Me neither, until now. He co-founded the company Global Eagle Acquisition, who filed for bankruptcy in 2020. He was using his considerable nest egg to back Nikki Haley for president. When she dropped out, Harry didn't go quietly for having backed the wrong horse, thus throwing away a boatload of money. No, Harry must have that malady that has been ailing many Americans since 2016. I'm not talking about COVID, folks. I'm referring to something far worse, Trump derangement syndrome. And Harry's got it bad, so now he wants to throw good money after bad by backing Biden. And he wants his fellow guy, rich guys to help too. He's even going to hold a Biden fundraiser. Here's hoping nobody shows up at Harry's bash for Bonehead Biden.
Weber's Whipping Post will be right back. A.N. Weber Incorporated is a proud sponsor of Weber's Whipping Post. Now in their 76th year, Weber has offices in Kankakee, Illinois, Nashville, Tennessee, El Paso, Texas, and Chandler, Arizona. Whether you're looking for company equipment to haul your dry van or flatbed freight, or logistics services for all types of freight, or even a career in driving, maintenance, or sales, call Mark Tedford at 815-939-2235. You can also apply online at anweber.com. Weber has immediate openings for drivers in all areas and mechanical technicians in Kankakee, Illinois, and El Paso, Texas. Weber is also looking for logistics agents across the country. Again, call Mark Tedford at 815-939-2235 or apply online at anweber.com. And now, back to Weber's Whipping Post.
By the time you hear this podcast, we might know how the dust settled on the standoff between New York Attorney General Letitia James and Trump. James is using the crooked legal system in New York to try to seize Trump properties, Trump Tower, including a golf course, and private estate known as Seven Springs. This, of course, stems from the ridiculous ruling by the kangaroo court of the imbecile Judge Engoron, who dropped a $464 million bombshell on Trump, which basically amounts to the theft by the government against a private citizen. On Monday morning, the amount was dropped to $175 million, taking a lot of steam out of James's sails. Trump has been unable to raise the original amount in the short amount of time he was given, which was probably known by both Engoron and James, but there isn't a lot of honor among thieves. They didn't want the money. They wanted to publicly take Trump down. Go ahead and do it, you dumb bastards. That action will almost certainly put Trump back in the White House. I hate to see what he will have in store for an idiot judge and his racist lawyer. American voters will certainly not like the government stealing private property. Well, Eric Carmen died last week. Eric recorded the hits All By Myself, Hungry Eyes from Dirty Dancing in his solo career, as well as the hit Go All The Way in 1972 with the group The Raspberries. He also wrote Almost Paradise, Love Theme, which appeared in Kevin Bacon's Footloose. He obviously was a large part of the 70s rock scene. Rest in peace, Eric. Well, Biden did it again. I'm talking about illegally forgiving $5.8 billion of debt for 78,000 deadbeat students employed by the government who can't or won't pay their student loan debt. I would imagine he figured this was a way to buy 78,000 more votes. This would be a good time to remind you the Supreme Court said Biden couldn't forgive student loans. This also means we taxpayers will have paid about $144 billion towards student debt to deadbeats and parasites who suck at the government tit. So the 87% of us who don't have student debt will now be strapped with paying their debt because, well, they're freeloaders. I guess this explains why Biden does so well in the polls. If you were secretly hoping Biden is kicked off the dim ticket and is replaced by California Governor Gavin Newsom, I have some sobering information for you to munch on. California is flat broke. They have $55 billion in red ink on the books that they can't pay. This is per a 2022 audited financial statement, which came a mere 350 days past the filing date, so don't expect the 2023 report out anytime soon. Part of that $55 billion is due to COVID-era unemployment fraud that amounted to an estimated $29 billion. Can you imagine if Governor Newsom became president and was able to stick his hand in the federal pocket? Well, as you know, baseball is about to begin. It'll be interesting to see if Shohei Ohtani will be in the major leagues by that time over accusations he may have been gambling on games. But that is not what this piece is about. Thanks to a reporter named Ryan Fagan, I have a few statistical coincidences that are just weird. Get ready to have your socks knocked off, folks. Hall of Famer Stan Musial of St. Louis Cardinals fame will start us off. Did you know Stan had 1,815 hits and 39 stolen bases at home in St. Louis over his career? Okay, but he also had exactly 1,815 hits and 39 stolen bases in road games. Weird, huh? It gets weirder. The left-handed Musial comes from the town of Donora, Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh. On November 21, 1920, another Hall of Fame lefty was born in Donora, Pennsylvania. On November 21st, Ken Griffey Jr. Whoa. Carlton Fisk from the White Sox did something similar to Musial on a lesser scale, as he had 188 lifetime homers at home and another 188 homers on the road. You remember Cecil Fielder from the 80s? He debuted in the majors at 21 years old and played for several teams, including a stint in Japan. He had a son playing in the majors named Prince, who was also 21 when he made the big time in the early 2000s. Did you know both father and son finished their careers with exactly 319 home runs? Whoa, again. Then at one point in the 70s, the Perry brothers, Jim and Gaylord, both had the same career record at 215 and 174. Granted, Gaylord would go on doing a lot more staying around with his knuckleball until he was 44 years old, but it is rather strange to have the same record as his brother at one time. Here's an odd one. Only three players had the first name of Aurelio while playing in the majors. All three died in car accidents. Monty Gaudio played from 63 to 73 and was killed in a 1990 truck accident. Rodriguez played from 67 to 83 and died in 2000 when a car hit him. Then there was Lopez, who played from 74 to 87 and died in 92 when he was thrown from a car that rolled over on him. And none of the Aurelios were related. How about the Upton brothers, BJ and Justin? They played in the big time at the same time in 2012. They both hit their 99th home run on the same day, July 20th. Then, on August 3rd, they both hit their 100th home run on the same day. Bizarre, ain't it? Okay, how old were you when you found out that there was actually three DiMaggio brothers that played pro baseball? I found out last Sunday. There was Joe, of course, who had the all-time record of a 56-game hitting streak in 1941. Joe had a brother named Don, who played for the Red Sox and owns their longest hitting streak at 34 games back in 1949. But did you know they had an older brother who played? Vince DiMaggio. Humorously, Joe rarely struck out, only 369 times and 4,313 times a bat. His high for a season was 39 in his rookie season. On the other side of that coin, his brother Vince, who led the National League in strikeouts six times, once 134 times in a season. Vince struck out more in three seasons than Joe did in his entire career. His brother Don didn't strike out that much either in his 10 seasons at Boston. How about Joe Niekro, who I remember pitching for the Cubs, batted 1,165 times in the big leagues. He had exactly one home run in that career. That homer came off his brother Phil on May 29, 1976. Phil got even, not by hitting a homer, but by batting a decent 316 lifetime off of Joe. By the way, the Niekro brothers had 10 more lifetime wins combined than the Perry brothers, 539 to 529. Now put that in perspective to Cy Young, who had 511 wins on his own. There were 22 players named Howard that have played in the majors. Last name. Only two, Ryan and Frank, hit more than 200 homers. I had a Frank Howard baseball card as a kid. They both hit exactly 382 homers. They are unrelated. In case you care, they have also hit the most homers in baseball history for anybody with the last name beginning in an H. Supposedly, there have been only two pitchers in league history with the last name of Moyer. This is really weird. It was Ed, who pitched for the Senators and died on November 18th, 1962. Now get ready to be weirded out. The next pitcher, named Moyer, was Jamie, and he was born on November 18, 1962, the same day Ed died. And they're not related either. Oakland outfielder Chris Davis batted .247 four consecutive seasons in a row. Vinny Castilla played for the Rockies in 1996 and again in 1997. He put up identical numbers. .304 batting average, 40 homers, 113 RBIs, and four sacrifice flies. Dale Murphy did something similar for the Atlanta Braves from 1982 to 1985. All 4 years, he played in all 162 games and hit 36 homers every season. Okay, I lied, except for 1985 when he hit 37 homers. Adam Dunn must have told Dale Murphy to hold his beer, because from 2005 to 2008, he hit 40 homers each season. Then he hit 38 homers in both 2009 and 2010. Sammy Sosa from the Cubs hit 60 homers in a season three times in his lifetime, but never led the National League in homers in those three seasons. How about this for Hall of Fame pitcher Warren Spahn? In his career, he had 363 wins, and he had 363 hits for the Braves. He had four wins for the Mets, and he had four hits. He pitched three wins for the Giants and had, you guessed it, three hits. But in playoff pitching, he had four wins, but then he had four hits. Wow. Lou Gehrig has always been one of my favorite players. He hit his first homer on September 27, 1923. Then he hit his last homer on September 27, 1938. September 27 seems to have been a good day for Lou, as over his career, he hit five homers on that date, twice off a Hall of Fame pitcher named Lefty Grove. Then it was April 30, 2009. Jermaine Dye of the White Sox, on a cold day in Detroit, hit his 300th homer of his career against Tiger starter Zach Minor. The next batter up was Paul Konerko. He, too, homered in his bat, and it was his 300th career homer. Back-to-back 300 homers. Two 1906 Cubs pitcher Jack Taylor and Orville Overall finished the year with the exact same stats. 12 wins, 3 losses overall, giving up 116 hits and 30 earned runs and one home run each. Okay, Taylor had the better ERA because he pitched a whole 3 1/3 innings more. Did you know if you take away every one of Hank Aaron's 755 homers, he still finishes with 3,016 hits? That is 6 more than Hall of Famer Wade Boggs. Then there's the amazing Nolan Ryan, who pitched 215 games with at least 10 strikeouts. If you took all those strikeouts away from his, he still finishes with 3,167 strikeouts, which would be 13th all time. If you take away half his strikeouts, he still finishes 20th all time. Ryan faced three different batters that owned the single-season home run record: Roger Maris, Mark McGwire, and Barry Bonds. Not one of those three hit a homer off Ryan, and they batted a combined 179. Those are some pretty weird statistics, folks. And now for my commentary, Rita Hayworth and a Shawshank Redemption. I really like this commentary. Andy came to Shawshank Prison in early 1947 for murdering his wife and the fella she was banging. That was a famous line spoken by Morgan Freeman, also known as Ellis Red Redman, in the movie The Shawshank Redemption. How old were you when you found out that the movie was filmed at an Ohio State reformatory rather than a fictional Maine prison the story led us to believe? Did you also know the movie was adapted from a book written by Stephen King named Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption? Me neither. Tim Robbins got the leading role as Andy Dufresne, sentenced to life for the murders of his wife and her lover, despite his innocence. Interestingly, Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, and Kevin Costner all wanted the role of Andy. Could you imagine any one of those others in that role instead of Robbins? Me neither. Personally, Morgan Freeman as Red, the contraband smuggler, was the best character in the movie. His acting was superb. His narration even better. The prison where the movie was shot is equally interesting. Located in Mansfield, Ohio, construction began in 1886 on ground formerly used as a training camp for Northern Civil War soldiers. After many funding delays, the facility was completed 24 years later in 1910 at a cost of just $1.32 million. Originally built as an intermediate reformatory for wayward boys, it was designed by Cleveland architect Levi Schofield. In 1896, the prison took in 150 offenders brought by train from Columbus, Ohio. Unfortunately, hardcore criminals began filtering into the prison, and with them, misfortune. In 1948, two past inmates, John West and Robert Daniels, kidnapped the prison's farm superintendent along with his wife and daughter. Stripped of their clothes, the family was then marched into a cornfield and murdered. Subsequently, the two criminals went on a crime spree, leaving six more people dead before being captured. West would die in a shootout with police, and Daniel was later executed in Old Sparky, the prison's electric chair. William Haas was the first person executed in the prison's electric chair in 1897. An illiterate farmhand, he raped and murdered his boss's wife. More than likely, with the seat still warm, it was taken minutes later when William Wiley, convicted of killing his wife, was also executed. Now get this, the guards made the two prisoners flip a coin to see who would be executed first. Urban Wilford had the misfortune to be the first officer killed at the prison by parolee Philip Orlick in 1926. Orlick returned to the prison just to liberate another prisoner and shot Wilford while he stood guard in the tower. Orlick was captured and executed within a year. 6 years later, guard Frank Hanger was beaten to death during a prison escape. Chester Probasky and Merrill Chandler were captured for their part of the beating and became intimate with Old Sparky as well. A 1930 prison fire resulted in 322 inmate deaths. By the time the prison was closed in 1990, due to a class action lawsuit filed by prisoners for the inhumane conditions, over 200 more people had died. Many perished of disease or suicide in the main part of the prison. And then there was the hole, where the fictional Andy spent time on a few occasions. It was real and had its own horrific story. One man was killed after being piled into the same cell with another inmate. Still another hung himself, and another man set himself on fire. The prison did have a few famous or infamous criminals. Henry Baker, who would later be part of the Boston's Great Brinks robbery, was one. Gates Brown took up residence at the prison before donning a Detroit Tigers professional baseball player uniform. And then after Doyle Baird was released from prison, he became a noted middleweight boxer. Many of the prison's support buildings have been demolished, while the rest of the complex became a museum. What was left includes the six tiers of the East Cell Block, which is the largest freestanding steel cell block in the world, and it was seen prominently in the movie Shawshank. There's an ongoing effort to restore the facility by the Mansfield Reformatory Preservation Society, and today, the reformatory is a major Ohio tourist attraction. It has its own Facebook page and is considered haunted, which leads to its popularity as a major tourist attraction. Public tours can be taken of the facility daily. I counted six different tours available. Given the success of the film, my research led me to believe a visit to Mansfield would be something to put on my bucket list. Maybe I'll even run into Red. Folks, if you like this podcast, please tell others. Check out my blog at www.webberswhippingpost.com. As I end this, on this week before Easter, I will leave you with a favorite passage from John 11, 25 through 26. Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live, and everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die." Happy Easter, folks.